Hi there, I'm F. Wesley Schneider. I'm the managing editor of Pathfinder, and you're listening to The Tome.
The Tome Show presents Second Darkness, Endless Night. I'm Jeffrey Wynn, and in this series we explore Second Darkness, the most recent Pathfinder adventure path from Paizo Publishing. In Part 4, Endless Darkness, the PCs must disguise themselves as drow, using a complicated necromantic spell, and infiltrate the dark and deadly drow city of Zerna Canaan. I am here with F. Wesley Schneider of Paizo. Welcome to the show, Wes.
Hey, thanks.
Do you prefer to be called Wes?
Yeah, Wes is great. No need for the F or anything.
What does the are we allowed to know what the F stands for, or is that a big secret?
That is a secret I will take with me to my grave.
That's your true name. If a wizard learns that, he can control you.
See, that's part of my fear, actually.
Okay, Wes, why don't you tell me a bit about the adventure that you wrote for this issue of Pathfinder?
Endless Night was kind of an experiment that we've been kicking around doing since kind of the dungeon days. Because there's always people on our message boards and just that we run into at conventions and whatnot who are like, hey, we love the adventures that you do and whatnot, but we'd love to play evil characters. How can we do that? How can we run a campaign? Are you ever going to do like an evil character's adventure path? And pretty much the gist of it is, no, we're not. Just because the majority of players enjoy like being the heroes and having the heroic adventures and whatnot. It's there's always something about being the knight in shining armor instead of the dude who invariably gets like gut stabbed at the end. Endless Night was kind of a way for us to have our cake and eat it too, because with Second Darkness, we've got this whole adventure path set up about the drow and whatnot.
Right.
And when we got to the point where it's like, well, we'd really like to show off where the drow live and whatnot, but how can we do that in a way that isn't just going to murder the PCs? Because drow are, like any drow, is a relatively formidable character. In an entire city of thousands of them, yeah, CR, a billion encounter, stab dead. So the idea that we came up with was, well, they've encountered the drow a few times. The PCs are knowing where they're going. What if we can swing a way to turn them into drow and let them go and participate in the drow society, which has like just enamored D&D players like all through the Greyhawk days and through like R.
Right.
Salvador's Drist novels and
so they're,
whatnot.
So they're not actually, the players don't actually get to play drow. They get to play their characters who are in disguise.
Yeah, that's the deal exactly. They don't get new stats or anything. They don't control different characters. They have their own characters that through a few magical manipulations that get worked up are teleported to an area near the drow city of Zerna Canaan and have this like elaborate, more necromantic than illusion magic laid over them.
It's explained in great detail how this spell works. It's very intricate. But they're just in disguise. So that means that like paladins are still paladins. It means that clerics are still clerics. They still have to sort of act within their alignment, so to speak.
Exactly. And that's actually one of the more interesting things, and one of the things that I personally think is one of the more fun parts of this, is that this does mean that you'll have characters that are paladins, or clerics, or valorous knights and whatnot, who have certain codes of honor that they are going to be at conflict with, being in a city that is fundamentally evil. And in some cases might force them to kind of take a more, kind of do things that they might not want to do or be in situations where if they don't want to do things that they're not going to want to do, perhaps put the party in danger.
So moving on from this adventure, there's two other big articles. This is a really drow heavy issue of a adventure path, which is already chock full of drow, but there's one article here about Zerna Canaan
and another one about the drow practice of flesh warping.
Yes.
Is there either one of those that you would care to talk about?
Well, the article about flesh warping is one of, well, first is written by J.D. Weicker and Darren Drader, two fantastic freelancers of ours. And what it is a look at a specific magic that is unique to the drow. The drow in Galarian take a much more first edition look at the race, kind of stance with the race, in that they are 100% demon worshippers. There's not a Loth analog. There's not the Spider Queen that they're all about.
Right.
Drow are demon worshippers in Galarian and are cyberites and magic addicted and will do anything, are completely immoral, do anything to get ahead. And one of the things that has stemmed out of that is this magical practice of flesh warping. And flesh warping is essentially using demonic magics to either give yourself an edge over whatever the competition might be by giving yourself like weird magical appendages or other features. And even grows even darker in that drow will use this upon their slaves to convert whole races into entirely different breeds of magical slaves. And there's a number of those that are discussed and a few that are even studded up in the bestiary.
Yeah, like the Vegeta pygmies that have been turned into something called the Weeping Beasts because their eyes continually are continually flowing water ducts. Sounds
They're
very.
Actually the halflings that are noted in that one. Something that we don't say, but are totally inspired by a scene in. Oh, I'm completely forgetting the movie now. I want to say, it's like Invasion of the Pod People, essentially. I'm forgetting the name now, but it's just these scary little guys with, like, essentially dog bodies and people faces that are just really creepy.
That's just wrong. There's a really scary picture here of a rather unfortunate drow being lowered into a vat of something that does not look altogether pleasant, so...
Yeah, it turns out that the drow don't have a lot of sympathy even for their own kind.
No, drow are not. I'm getting that. Drow are not very nice people. No,
well, that's one of the things that we definitely wanted to run with this is that while there's a lot of folks that want to play drow and want to be drow and whatnot, and I mean through characters like Drist and whatnot, you see them being very heroic and. God knows how many players out there are like, my character is just like Driss, but with axe going on. We really wanted to drive home, drow are bad guys.
They are very bad. They have some bad mojo going on. Now, what I want to, you know what, something we haven't touched on, I think, yet in these interviews is these sort of set piece adventures that have become part of Pathfinder since... the start of Second Darkness. Now, there's one in here which I haven't actually read, but it's called The Blood Below. Why did you guys decide to start putting these sort of set pieces in your adventures?
So the set pieces serve a few different roles. First, we are always looking for ways to make Pathfinder more marketable to a larger portion of the gaming audience. And part of the hard thing to do with Pathfinder is that when you've got an adventure path, you aren't selling just one volume. You're selling a set of six. If you're picking up Pathfinder, you have a subscription or whatever have you, and it turns out you violently don't like drow, then for 6 months, you don't have a lot to use. There's stuff in the back that can totally be adapted, but the main drive of the volume is always the adventure path. The set pieces are meant to kind of serve two masters. One is to be something that somebody who might not be super into the adventure path can still pick up and use and have and play with as their own mini adventure. That doesn't
have
a lot of
small Pathfinder modules.
Yeah, exactly. Or like the sidetracks that used to run in Dungeon.
The other thing that they're meant to do is try to still serve people that are running the adventure paths. So the Blood But Low, for example, which is very much our homage to movies
right.
like The Descent, with like the Morlocks and whatnot and the Time Machine,
is also meant to be something that, while it's not tightly ingrained to the adventure, it's still something that works in and is on theme, and if you want to run that, there it is for you.
Cool. So subterranean adventure with a pack of wild, ferocious beasts at your heels.
That's right.
Sounds pretty fun. I'm just flipping through here, and I'm flipping through the monsters, and what the first monster I noticed is that you have a deep crow in the monster
that
section.
That is true.
I don't believe I have ever talked about the monster section before, but I just had to. This is from Penny Arcade.
It is indeed. So the thing with the Deep Crow is pretty much all of us here are big Penny Arcade fans, and myself specifically am a huge video gamer and whatnot. While like Eric and James tend to take something of an old school vantage, referring to like modules and books that came out before I was even born. A lot of the fantasy that I grew up with were games like Final Fantasy or the Zelda series or whatever have you. So, I mean, video games have always been a huge part of my inspiration. The Deep Crow comes right from the Penny Arcade strips.
Right, this was something that was invented pretty much just as a joke, just for the name and the visual gag of like there's a Deep Crow and here
yeah.
it is. It's a Deep Crow and it's funny. And you
yeah.
made it into an actual monster with an ecology and a habitat and society and all of these things.
Well, it turns out that Jerry Holkins, who is the character Tycho, has always been a big D&D player and whatnot, and lets that slip into the strips every now and then. But when the Deep Crow episodes came out on Penny Arcade, it was just like, that is totally a D&D monster. I mean, that is as much a D&D monster as the Owlbear or the Rust monster. That's so
right.
D&D. So these guys live in Seattle as well, and we've run into them a few times at like the Penny Arcade Expo and whatnot. And they do this awesome charity every year called Child's Play, which
right.
if you and all of your listeners haven't checked out yet, childsplaycharity.org just does awesome stuff for kids every year. But so we just gave them a yell, and they have worked with us back in the Dragon days in a number of cases, and they were like, sure, if you guys wanted to stat the monster up, I mean, just run it by us, and yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, it was just something that we thought would be fun, they thought would be fun, and there it is.
Okay. There's another monster in here that I thought was sort of interesting, the Mothman. Do you want to speak a bit about this guy? Because he seems really sort of mysterious.
So the Mothman is a fantastic East Coast, Virginia, Silver Bridge urban legend.
You
which,
sort of lost it there. I've never heard of the Silver Bridge.
The Silver Bridge area, I believe that's the name, if I'm not screwing it up here. The story behind the Mothman is pretty much that this strange alien creature was sighted near Point Pleasant, Virginia, and just they were in this case of mass hysteria where a number of people claimed to see this like weird winged creature. And a number of days or weeks after that, the Silver Bridge in Point Pleasant collapsed, and a number of people were died. And a lot of this was associated with this creature called Mothman. This is where the story of the book and the movies, The Mothman Prophecies, came from. And it's
okay.
just this kind of eerie, other, mysterious creature.
Which is pretty much the story of the monster as it is here in Pathfinder.
Exactly. I tried to make it a very truthful recreation. Just because James especially, but myself as well, are just huge fans of cryptozoology. That's why in like Pathfinder 1, you see instead of our version of the Jersey Devil with the Sandpoint Devil.
Right. It really struck me as I was reading. I'm totally not familiar with the Silver Bridge legend. So as I was reading this, I was just like, this is something that's very mysterious, and I don't quite get what this is. Do you think that people who don't know the story might have a hard time using this monster in their campaigns?
Well, the neat thing about it is that part of the mystery of it is that it's supposed to be mysterious. If you don't get it 100%, I think that's part of what it's supposed to be, because the creature itself, even from essentially American mythology, is supposed to be that kind of, you don't get it, you don't understand it, nobody's really sure what it is. Even if you go to, like, the Wikipedia page on Mothman, there's just so much contradiction and, like, weird kind of stories about it. So any of that that gets conveyed into this is half on purpose, just because it's not really a monster that you run up and fight. It's a monster that kind of shows up, might manipulate a few things, and then is way too smart to go toe-to-toe with a bunch of adventurers.
I'm always kind of... See, I bring this up because I'm always kind of ambivalent about how I feel about mysteries in a D&D product, because they did this all the time with Eberron. Like, I'd be reading the book and it'd be like, here's the thing. We don't know what it is. We're not going to tell you what it is. It could be this or it could be this, but we're not going to tell you. You as the DM have to decide for yourself. And on the one hand, I'm like,
yeah,
great. It's an outlet for me to be creative. But on the other hand, I'm like, well, what do I do with this? You know, I feel like whatever I come up with as an explanation is not going to do justice to the mystery.
Yeah, it's like, I'm the DM. I get to know. I'm not the player. Tell me.
I actually saw an interesting post on your message boards. Eric Mona was asking to get people's opinions on Epic rules and what they thought should be changed, or what they thought Epic rules should feel like.
Yeah. Part of that is coming out of discussions that we've been having, because we're well into the development of the Pathfinder RPG as its own role-playing game in our Pathfinder Bestiary, which is going to be our monster book and everything. But now we're actually starting to look beyond a lot of that. And it's like, well, what are we going to do next? Well, traditionally, books like Manual of the Planes or epic-level adventures or your kind of Asian adventure type books tend to come pretty quick on the heels of a game's core release.
It's just been a few days since that post went up. So have you gotten any good responses so far?
Well, it's pretty much just testing the waters on all of the fronts right now. We want to find out what our readership wants. At the same time, we don't want to follow the same release pattern of, like, your second editions and your third editions and whatnot. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next few weeks here you start to see a few posts like that, and just feeling out ideas for not only what do people want to see next, but what do they want to see different next.
Are you going to have a podcast where you invite the Penny Arcade guys to come play Pathfinder RPG with you?
That would be awesome. We've got a really good relationship with them. And make sure that they get a good number of our products and whatnot. I made sure that they got a stack of 16 here when it came out. But right now, they seem pretty enthused with 4th edition. And
you know what?
More power to them. If that's the game that works for them, great.
You know what? Maybe you can get Vin Diesel.
That'd be pretty cool, actually.
I would listen to that podcast. Vin Diesel and I don't know who else. Robin Williams plays a Warhammer. I know that.
Oh, wouldn't have called that one.
There we go. Vin Diesel and Robin Williams playing Pathfinder RPG. There is your next project. I expect you to set that up.
Yeah, I'll run that by Eric right after this. I promise.
All right. Well, it was very nice having you on the program, Wes. It was nice talking to you, and I hope you come back again.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for giving me a yell and for doing this whole series on Second Darkness.
To find out more about Pathfinder and their wide range of D&D products, you can visit paizo.com/pathfinder. Also, be sure to check out our own homepage, thetomeshow.com, where you can browse past shows, join a discussion in our forums, or visit our Amazon store to purchase the D&D products you've been looking for. This has been The Tome Show Presents Second Darkness. I'm Jeff Wynn, and thanks for listening.